Welcome to a special bonus episode of Hot Off the Wire. In this edition of our daily news program, we feature a selection of stories covering a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee Enterprises and your curator of news. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire through Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss daily news updates. And now, those stories from the Associated Press.
Local amusement parks are hoping for a strong summer amid the looming shadow of Trump tariffs making things more expensive. At Playland's Castaway Cove on the Jersey Shore,
we have 30 rides,
a lot from overseas.
So the tariffs have a huge impact,
both on replacement parts and the prizes people win after playing amusement park games. They're usually from China. Vice President Brian Hartley loaded up on a summer's worth before the tariffs kicked in.
Try to save that cost so we could keep our prices down for our guests.
That's a selling point for people like Chris Del Borello, whose family visits yearly.
We build memories every single summer.
With prices rising elsewhere,
Castaway Cove's very affordable.
But Hartley says the tariffs may change that.
Eventually, it is something that might have to be passed on to the customer.
He's worried economic uncertainty might affect people who haven't already booked summer vacations. I'm Sagar Meghani.
A toy company is going to the Supreme Court to challenge President Trump's tariffs. Learning Resources, the maker of Pretend and Play Calculator Cash Register and Botley, the coding robot, is making a long-shot attempt to get a quick decision from the justices on whether the tariffs are legal. Their case is still being played out in lower courts. The company says the president illegally imposed tariffs under an emergency powers law rather than getting approval from Congress. The CEO of Learning Resources, Rick Woldenberg, says tariffs and uncertainty over them are taking a major toll now. Back to school and holiday seasons are ahead, when the company usually makes most of its sales for the year. Woldenberg says all the people that are raising their prices because of tariffs are doing it with a sense of dread, but they do not have a choice. The new coronavirus variant has earned a nickname. The variant is called Nimbus. The nickname is Razor Blade Throat COVID. It may cause painful, sore throats. The symptoms were identified by doctors in the UK, India, and elsewhere. Other symptoms of any variant include fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, or loss of taste or smell. Experts say there isn't any major cause for concern with razor blade throat COVID. The World Health Organization says the rise in cases is mostly in the Eastern Mediterranean, Southeast Asia, and Western Pacific regions. Airport screenings in the U.S. detected the new variant in travelers arriving from those regions to California, Washington State, Virginia, and New York. The WHO says the public health risk is low, and current vaccines are expected to remain effective. I'm Ed Donahue.
The Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research poll shows that most Americans broadly support increasing or maintaining existing levels of funding for popular safety net programs, including Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, and food stamps. They're more divided on spending around the military and border security. As Republican senators debate President Donald Trump's bill that could slash federal spending and extend tax cuts, the survey points to a slight disconnect between the Republicans' policy agenda and public sentiment around the domestic programs that are up for debate. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
About 1,100 miles from the southern start of the Appalachian Trail, Sam Cooper, known on the trail as Pie Top, chokes down another spoonful of chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream.
What I'm doing is eating a half gallon of ice cream at the halfway point on the Appalachian Trail. It's called the Half Gallon Challenge.
Cooper's taking on the challenge offered for more than four decades to thru-hikers.
It's a big accomplishment, making it halfway.
Angela Simons is the manager at the Pine Grove Furnace General Store in Pennsylvania.
It's the tradition, you know what I mean, just a little something to say, hey, I made it halfway and I did the Half Gallon Challenge, so a little bragging rights.
40 minutes later.
Yay, all right.
We did it.
Cooper was awarded a commemorative wooden spoon, adding his name to a list that's a topic of conversation and pride among thru-hikers at campfires and shelters.
That's about a third of my calories for the day.
The half-gallon record, less than 4 minutes, was set 2 years ago by a man with a trail name, Squirt. I'm Jennifer King.
Hi, I'm Haya Panjwani, and I'm the host of The Story Behind the AP Story. Today we're joined by Leanne Itali, a lifestyles reporter for the Associated Press. Hi, Leanne. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. Today, we're going to talk about chair yoga. What is it?
Yeah, sure. So chair yoga has a really sort of interesting and important history. It
traditional yoga done on the floor on mats is over 5,000 years old, but chair yoga is a relatively new offshoot. In 1982, a yoga instructor named Lakshmi Volker noticed that a student of hers in a traditional yoga class who was in her 30s and suffered from arthritis was having trouble getting down on the floor. So Volker decided to adapt some poses for use in a chair. And she has since sort of become the guru of chair yoga, and she has co-written a book about it. Chair yoga has really gone a long way in boosting the accessibility of yoga itself to, you know, many age groups, including, you know, older people and people who have physical limitations.
Are there any communities that benefit from chair yoga in particular?
Absolutely. You know, chair yoga is great for anybody who, you know, who wants a gentle workout, but it's not easy, and there are many, many benefits. So obviously it has a lot to offer older people, particularly older women who are prone to osteoporosis, and it's a gentle and safe way to improve your flexibility, your strength, and your balance. It helps minimize the risk of falls and fractures. There's not a body part that it really doesn't help. It helps the spine, the hips, the legs, all engaged. It also helps your core, helps you strengthen your core and your back, and it can help manage stiffness and pain associated with a lot of conditions, including arthritis and osteoporosis. And it's not difficult to adapt traditional yoga poses for a chair, which I found kind of surprising because, you know, yoga looks so daunting sometimes. And there's a spiritual aspect to yoga that a lot of people don't realize, you know, in the West. You know, in addition to all the physical benefits, you know, there are relaxation benefits. There's, you know, stress management benefits, like from the breathing and the mindfulness aspect of yoga. So all of that can be adapted to a chair as well.
How is chair yoga linked to better well-being or fall prevention?
Yeah, I mean, while there's a lot of research on regular traditional yoga, there is some research that breaks out chair yoga in particular. One study from 2012 found that 15 minutes of chair yoga significantly improves physical and psychological markers for stress. And then another study in the April 2023 journal Healthcare indicates that chair yoga went a long way to counter knee osteoarthritis in women 65 and older. There are other benefits too, like for instance, office workers who spend a lot of time hunched over screens can just do chair yoga right there in their chair at their desks, and that can really improve posture.
Your story talks about the divide between men and women who do yoga. Why is that?
I find this really, really interesting, and in the story that we did on chair yoga, we asked some longtime yoga participants, practitioners, what they thought. Some women in their 70s and their 80s who've been doing yoga for 40, 50 years, why are there not more men in your classes? And they said, well, there's no one definitive answer here, and there's no way to avoid a massive generalization on who men are as a group, but you know, so you do get different answers depending on who you ask, but data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention do show that women are more than twice as likely as men to practice yoga. You know, ancient yoga in over the many thousands of years was exclusively reserved for men, and then it became popular in Western culture in the 1960s and 70s as part of sort of the hippie counterculture movement and the New Age movement. And marketing started to skew to women in the 80s and 90s. And that sort of was an outgrowth of the growing fitness industry in the West and the rise of workouts like on VHS tapes and DVDs that people could do at home.
Thank you for listening to the story behind the AP story. To listen to previous episodes, visit apnews.com.
Locals, art lovers, and diplomats like to meet over a meal and a drink in the historic gastro bar Berlage behind a landmark art museum in The Hague. It's dead, owner Bianca Wienhoff says, as she looks at her almost empty terrace. The massive military and police operation called Orange Shield has turned the usual stream of visitors into a trickle. Parts of the usually laid-back city where NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte used to ride his bicycle to work while munching on an apple are turning into a military fortress. The June 24-25 summit, scheduled to feature leaders of the 32-nation alliance, including President Donald Trump, comes as global geopolitical tensions soar and conflict escalates in the Middle East. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
An African Baptist church is being rebuilt at Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia. Janice Candidate of African American Community Engagement says the new structure will recognize one of the oldest black congregations in the country.
1776 is when we formally have the organization of a church, or it's documented. But these people were gathering before it was legal for them to even come together.
The original meeting house was destroyed by a tornado in 1834, and a larger church was built in 1856. But Colonial Williamsburg archaeologist Jack Gary says it was demolished in 1957 and was eventually turned into a parking lot.
Colonial Williamsburg began working with the descendants, the modern congregation, to understand this property better and to recreate the first meeting house.
Candidate says it's not the first time black churches and other buildings have been covered over.
Moving a few houses would never erase the presence of these people.
Aflac says it's identified suspicious activity on its network in the U.S., which may impact personal information, including Social Security numbers. The insurance company says the incident is part of a cybercrime campaign against the industry and that the intrusion was stopped within hours. Aflac says so far it's unable to determine the number of affected customers. It says it will offer free credit monitoring, identity theft protection, and medical shield for 24 months to anyone that calls its call center. I'm Donna Warder.
The security situation in the Baltic is tense.
Lieutenant General Kim Jorgensen says Denmark needs
to improve the capabilities of Danish defense, and this includes in the maritime domain.
Those tensions, including suspected sabotage, have escalated since Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
We're seeing people smuggle people, weapons, illegal fishing, narcotics, and damage to critical infrastructure, so undersea cables and pipelines. It needs to be seen. It's currently happening because no one's observing it.
Richard Jenkins is founder and CEO of California-based SailDrone, which has built robotic sailboats.
And we use onboard sophisticated machine learning and AI to fuse that data to give us a full picture of what's above and below the surface.
Powered by wind and solar energy, they can operate autonomously for months.
The challenge is that you basically need to be on the water all the time, and it's humongously expensive.
Peter Viggo Jacobsen at the Royal Danish Defence College.
And it's simply too expensive for us to have a warship trailing every single Russian ship, be it a warship or a civilian freighter of some kind. So we need to find some way of keeping surveillance as cheaply as possible.
Jenkins again.
So we have radars, cameras, optical, infrared, RF acoustics and sonar under the water. Those things give us a really a full picture as far as we can see, which is about 20 to 30 miles in the open ocean.
Jorgensen says the Danish armed forces are conducting a three-month operational trial with four of them.
They're going to cruise Danish waters and then later they're going to join up with the two that are NATO exercise.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Some 300,000 refugees at the Kakuma camp in Kenya have had less food since the U.S. paused support to the UN World Food Program in March. Refugee Martin Komal says the food received in May lasted only a week, and the widower and his five children relied on handouts from neighbors for the rest of the month. Colin Buletti, who heads the World Food Program at the camp, says they're getting a lot of malnutrition cases.
No diversification of diet, no more variety of diet, and no more support in terms of the basic needs they used to get.
And Buletti says it will get worse in August if the WFP doesn't receive any funding between now and then.
It means only a fraction of the refugees will be able to get assistance.
The U.S. had been the world's biggest donor. I'm Donna Warder.
On this week's AP Religion Roundup, Charleston Church Massacre survivors commemorate 10 years since the shooting, and reconstruction begins on a black church as old as the United States.
I'm hopeful that we can teach love and remind people that we didn't choose our skin color,
We didn't choose our first language.
Chris Singleton's mother was among the 9 killed at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina.
We didn't choose where we were born or who we were born to. So I would never hate you for those things. And hopefully you never hate me for them just as well.
The anti-black shooting took place on June 17, 2015, at the oldest black church in the southern United States.
It's passed by so quickly, it's truly seemed like just yesterday.
Marvin Stewart is a church member who says the struggles they faced continue a decade later.
Without the community support, supporting each other, it would be even more difficult than what we're presently experiencing.
In Colonial Williamsburg, rebuilding a black church from 1776 began at a Juneteenth ceremony this week. AP's Donna Warder has more.
An African Baptist church is being rebuilt at Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia. Janice Candidate of African American Community Engagement says the new structure will recognize one of the oldest black congregations in the country.
1776 is when we formally have the organization of a church, or it's documented. But these people were gathering before it was legal for them to even come together.
The original meeting house was destroyed by a tornado in 1834, and a larger church was built in 1856. But Colonial Williamsburg archaeologist Jack Gary says it was demolished in 1957 and was eventually turned into a parking lot.
Colonial Williamsburg began working with the descendants, the modern congregation, to understand this property better and to recreate the first meeting house.
Kennedy says it's not the first time black churches and other buildings have been covered over.
Moving a few houses would never erase the presence of these people.
I'm Donna Warder.
I'm Walter Ratliff.
I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you for listening. Audio provided by the Associated Press. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode.